Hello and welcome to The Future is Spoken, produced by the Digital Assistant Academy. This show accompanies the Digital Assistant Academy's course entitled Voice Interaction Design. The adoption of voice technology continues to surge, with assistants like Amazon Alexa and Google Assistant becoming staples in our everyday lives. Adobe recently observed that 91% of brands are already making significant investments in voice. As brands are thinking about designing any voice application, having the right voice strategy is essential. In today's episode, Shyamala Prega speaks with Susan and Scott Westwater about voice design strategy for everyone. Susan and Scott Westwater are the husband and wife co-founders of Pragmatic Digital, where they advise the world's most innovative brands that want to capitalize on the incredible opportunity voice represents. Through their consultancy, Susan and Scott help clients solve their marketing and customer experiences problems using customer-centric approaches to plan and create useful and usable voice experiences for their audiences. They have presented and authored a number of talks, workshops, articles, and ebooks focused on the role voice technology plays in marketing and business strategy. Together, they authored the book Voice Strategy: Creating Useful and Usable Voice Experiences, and are working on a second book titled Voice Marketing, which will be released in spring 2022. Susan and Scott are also co-founders of Voice Masters, an online education program designed to teach innovative business teams about voice and voice strategy, and ambassadors for the Open Voice Network and instructors for the Marketing AI Institute AI Academy. They both were recognized in VoiceBot's Top 68 Leaders in Voice 2020, and Scott was recently included in SoundHound's Top 40 Voice AI Influencers to follow on Twitter. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to The Future is Spoken. I have a very special episode today where we are going to talk about voice strategy for everyone. And I have Susan and Scott Westwater with me from Pragmatic Digital. Welcome, Susan. Welcome, Scott.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I'm so looking forward to this episode. Yeah. Why don't you tell us about yourself?
Sure. Definitely. I'll go first. We're both co-founders of Pragmatic Digital. I am the CEO. I come to voice via the content and UX perspective. So my experience actually started back in the trenches of strategy long before actually the web existed, and then moving and adding that in. So I've worked in regulated and unregulated industries with a variety of clients on the agency side, as well as on corporate. So I have this wonderful experience of being on that side of services, and then the other side of being in the enterprise organization and understanding how do you get that? How do you even navigate those waters versus just doing all the doer work? So we decided to create Pragmatic Digital because we saw a need in the space. We see the potential of voice from a perspective of inclusivity, accessibility, as well as just an incredible way to build a relationship with a brand and reduce friction to improve customer experience. So it just made a lot of sense to us at the time. And so we spent quite a bit of time entrenched in the voice space, learning all we could. And then here we are today.
Yeah. And I come from the more traditional agency side. So I was an agency art director for many years, worked on TV commercials, print campaigns, a lot of branding and messaging. And then about 10 years ago, I pivoted into user experience. And so, you know, early in my career, I was working on some of the first websites that ever existed, like Walgreens.com and HEB.com and things like that. And then also a lot of startups that didn't make it during the dot-com boom and bust. But so, you know, throughout my career, I've seen this transition to from the web, or from traditional to the web to mobile. And in 2017, I was doing a lot of listening to Gary Vaynerchuk, and he was talking a lot about this thing called voice and using Amazon Alexa to order products. And so I just, by nature of what I did some research into it. And I started seeing the same story and the numbers lining up exactly like I saw in the early days of the web and the early days of mobile. So I said to her, hey, this is a huge opportunity that I think we have in front of us. Rather than, you know, letting this pass us by and having, you know, working for other people to take advantage of it, let's start our own company and actually build something based on helping companies with their voice strategy. So that's really what we ended up doing.
That's an amazing journey. I mean, two different very backgrounds, and then, you know, you are merging both the expertise, which are very critical for conversation design. In general, right? Like content and UX, both are so important. And then creating something completely different, which is you focus on strategies more, right?
Yeah.
If I rightly mentioned. So, which is amazing.
So. Yeah, and it's kind of funny. Like, I was working on a lot of conversational interfaces without even knowing that they were conversational interfaces 5-6 years ago. So I worked on a project where we effectively recreated Google, and we were creating an answer question and answer engine. And so, like, that strategy and a lot of the work that we did there was foundational for what we do in conversation design now, which is amazing to think about.
Totally, yeah. This is interesting and very impressive for sure, right? And how is it working together, you know, like being spouse? Do you see that has helped you because you have a better understanding, or do you see there are challenges?
I think definitely what we've learned is, like, partnership is partnership. I will say too that being professionally and personally attached means that it is a little more no holds barred when we have a something we want to say, because it has to get said. So that helps with our situation, but it also keeps things from escalating. And so therefore it's usually just a good conversation if there is something that we don't see eye to eye on, and we don't always agree, which is really important, is, you know, we both have the freedom to say, yeah, you know what, we may have the same last name, but we don't have the same viewpoint. And so that's been really good. I will say we do have offices on different floors of the house, and we do have our time away from each other because it's important. But I think everyone's struggling with that right now in the pandemic. And I'm just grateful we moved to a house 2 years ago, as opposed to being in a small condo in the city of Chicago right now.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. And I like it. You're a good team. And congratulations, by the way, for making it into the voice influencers.
Oh, thank you.
That was a nice feather in the cap for December.
Well, and a huge surprise. I mean, we didn't know that we were even being considered until, I mean, literally we saw our name on the list. So yeah, that was a very nice surprise and a pretty big honor, quite honestly. So
yeah, for sure. Definitely. That makes a lot of sense, right? Because you're working on this space, which is really interesting and evolving every day. So tell us about voice strategy. You know, what does voice strategy mean at all?
So the core of it is, and this is where our UX roots show, is the whole idea of voice strategy is, we know that you can build the most amazing thing in the world and it can work beautifully. But if it's not the right thing, then it's for naught. And it's almost a waste, you know, it's a waste of money. I mean, you'll learn something, but so our whole feeling is that if with the proper strategy, and we've seen this play out in other technologies, is by making sure that something is useful and usable, so it's actually helpful to the audience we intend, and then they actually can use it, then by using those that simple strategy and that simple thought process, we are able to then make sure that what we create has a better chance of success. And that way, then we can also roadmap out the ways to build the trust, especially with new technology. Like, the, you know, I always am telling clients, the good news is you're leading edge. You're taking advantage of something early so that there are tolerances. If things aren't perfect, this is a great time to work in voice. The bad news is this is like the early, you know, the mid 90s where we had to explain to people, here's what a website is. You know, I joke that I actually had someone ask me, who's Earl, when they saw URL on something. I mean, so we're in those days of trying to teach people that without giving it a second thought, you ask your voice device, or you look for that voice experience that is a layer on there. Just like how we do, where we're like, oh, I need to check out if this has a web, you know, you don't even think for a minute if something has a website. You either Google it or you just type in the brand name. That's where we're looking of how do we make that work. And so there are pieces to that strategy of how are you going to roll this out? How are you going to manage the expectations and the promises? So that comes through a lot of strategic thinking through who is your audience? What is it you sell them? But it's also important to balance out not just what the audience needs, but what your business needs so that it's actually businessly viable. Businessly, there's a word. But, you know, and we need to make sure that things are commercial. I mean, I've worked on the commercialization of many products or services through my previous lives. Not everything is something that should be. It's like, this is amazing. We can make so much money. And it's like, as you start to go through the commercialization process, you realize, okay, so only five companies are really going to like this and or need this. Wait a minute, this doesn't make sense, or the barriers can't be overcome. So those are important things you need to think about ahead of time so that you're not going all the way down this road and then finding out at launch or even testing and, you know, proof of concept, I've invested how many hundreds of thousands of dollars or how much. It's just the earlier we can be sure that we're hedging our bets, the better.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where we were talking, you know, before we start recording, the ROI story for internal stakeholders, that's where the strategy really comes in. And it's how we actually prove to the business that this is a sound investment of their dollars, and they're going to actually see a return on that investment. So I think, you know, user experience really pushed us really far down the path of user centricity and creating something that the audience wants. Before that, we had a big focus on the organization and what the organization wants. And so, like Susan said, we see this as the intersection between both of those needs. And that's really where you focus. So you have that ROI story, you get the quick win internally, you can, you know, socialize it within the organization, and then you can actually then build out a fuller, more robust strategy. So we very much believe in the crawl, walk, run approach and making sure that it's something that makes sense to both audiences so we can get those quick wins and deliver ROI.
Yeah, I think the important thing to know is that there are two types of voice experiences. There's voice as a product, which is that thing where all roads lead to this thing. And sometimes it's a game. Sometimes it's utilities from a standpoint of smart home or things like that. And it's your hub. But then for many, many other brands and businesses and just business models, voice is a part of them. And so that's where strategy comes in. Like, we often start with a customer journey, or we can look at service design slices and we can start to say, where does voice make sense? Because it doesn't make sense in every single thing. We know that. So we don't try to, you know, basically force that square peg into a round hole. But that's where some of the ROI story can come in as well, of saying, well, if I'm in an awareness phase, here's what I'm already willing to accept as far as my ROI story. It doesn't have to be direct, because it can't be. Or attribution's kind of a challenge this way. All right, well, let's figure that out. So that way then there is a comfort zone. You know, I have gotten sassy and said to someone, well, what's your direct ROI story for your social program? Oh, sorry. All right, let's start going through that and talking through that. And sometimes there is. So, I mean, there's always sometimes. I feel like that's all we always, sometimes it depends. But the reality is that there are already been parts of this that have been thought through. And it's a matter of just reminding your stakeholders, you know what? We accept that this isn't going to be an immediate thing. When we talk about customer journeys, it's about moving them forward, not about always be closing. I think the fellows from Glengarry Glen Ross would be crying right now, but the reality is that people don't want to be sold to at every step of the way. There are ways though that voice can help facilitate that we move them to a point where they're ready to buy. And so that's a part of it, of that commerce. And sometimes it's not even ready to buy. It's, how can I help you stay with my brand or stay with my product? Because I'm giving you the support you need when you want it. And that's one of the really exciting things, is we talk a lot about customer service, but it is an incredible retention thing. And it's cheaper to retain a client or a customer than it is to get to acquire them. So that's where we also then play in that space. If for the first time in a while, we're able to really deliver on that. And when you start adding in all of the beautiful layers of conversational design, of adding in audio and sonic branding, it's a lot more rich than just waiting on an IVR phone tree.
Yeah, that's a great point, right? And there are so much depth into this one point which you guys mentioned. You know, there are so many things in there, right? From thinking about the use case itself, like where does voice fit into the overall digital strategy, to thinking about how to even convince the stakeholders, right? And from there, thinking about, okay, how do we tell them? What is the ROI? Why should we invest in this? So how does this work out? Like, you know, what would you say? Where does the voice fit into the strategy? Like, when someone is thinking about starting a voice strategy for their company, you know, how should they approach it?
Yeah, I think the best way to approach it is start small and then kind of evolve over time. So find that one use case, that one instance that makes sense for both organization and the audience. And so maybe it's customer service and we're trying to reduce call center volume to improve customer experience. Maybe that's what we want to do. Start there, get some small wins, and really look at the, you know, 15 to 20 questions that always come in that require someone to normally call in. Put those on a voice assistant and, you know, create something that works on your website, on Alexa, on Google Assistant, et cetera, so that if someone does call in on the on hold music, they can actually hear, hey, if you have an Amazon Alexa or Google Assistant, all you have to do is say this to get your question answered. Being able to start with those basic things that the assistants and AI can handle are going to give you a lot of learnings. You're going to also see the additional questions that people might have and are trying to solve with that. And so call center is a great area to focus on up front. You know, top of funnel tactics, if that's something that you're looking to do, is also a good area to look at, because, you know, we've seen the purchase data research or the purchase research from voice assistants, and people are trying to make purchases with their assistants. And so when you actually look at the tasks that they're trying to complete, it's basically the path to purchase that they would see on the web or in store. So it's research, it's, you know, product information, it's looking up stores that have it. And so if you're an organization that already has that content, maybe that exists on an e-com website, look at grabbing some of that and creating that path all the way down. You don't have to complete the purchase through voice, but if people are already looking for this information, wouldn't it be better to come from you than from Wikipedia? And so I think there's a huge amount of opportunity, especially with voice search, to optimize your web content and also create voice experiences that really start to do that top of funnel and move them to that next piece of the customer experience journey. But again, it really depends on what the organization's goals are and what they're trying to achieve. Is it cost reduction? Are they trying to increase sales? And then from there, it's figuring out where they already have programs that voice can be added on where it makes sense to enhance that experience.
I mean, chances are your organization knows what their problems are, mm-hmm. And where their challenges come into play. The big problem, and we've seen this, I've seen this, and Scott's seen this as well, is there's either a tendency to pick the one big home run problem and keep trying to solve it. And they either do solve it, but they keep solving it again, or they're not solving it at all. And so one of the things to do is also is look within. And that's where, again, the customer journey makes it approachable and bite-sized, because otherwise it's, we want more sales. Well, how's that going to happen? Well, there's a whole bunch of phases that happen before someone's willing to pull out, you know, and sign checks. So it comes down to thinking through, what do we already know? What are we doing well? And does that translate because voice would make that easier? Or what are we not doing so well? And maybe voice can help, because that actually is the X factor that's been missing. And you can borrow because you need to. You want to be consistent. Like, voice is not a lug on. And that's kind of the thing that I've seen, it bolted onto certain campaigns and it doesn't make sense. I get the impatience though of, hey, I can track this because I just put it on here and slapped it on. And then, you know, you just click through here and it's like, well, no, think about how you can integrate it. One of the campaigns that I've been excited to see this December has been like the iRoomba, and how they're finally starting to ramp that out. They've been developing that for a while. And that again is that crawl, walk, run of where for a while they have that and they offer that capability. Now that it's really solid, they are comfortable saying, hey, you know what? You can use your voice. You can do this remotely. And then they're integrating it into all of their marketing messages. And those are the ways that you're going to get your audiences to understand, oh, that's how I use that. Or that's what I do with that. And we all know there's a thousand steps to that. But part of that starts with taking that first step in the journey of, okay, what is it that people want to be able to do? How can I make that easier? And how does that align then with what our business is about or what it is we promise to do? And it's hard sometimes because that means voice isn't the center of your universe, but it's a really important part of that universe that we need to enable, because that's where then the users will go. But right now we have to teach them to go there.
Yeah, definitely. I like it. You know, what you said, walk, crawl, run, right? It's like that. First, you have to make them feel like they have to feel comfortable with a specific service before they can start using the next level of it. Yeah. It's exactly like, you know, unlocking a game, right?
Yeah.
Do something and then, you know, it gets to the next level. And this is perfect when it comes to enterprise level things, like, you know, look at the customer data and search for what kind of things would make sense for voice. Yeah. But how about things like automotive space or mm-hmm. something you're designing for home or elderly care or things like that, where, you know, it's completely different. It's more consumer driven and mm-hmm. we don't know where the opportunity lies.
So I think that this, again, though, where you look and say, what are your use cases from a standpoint of what are the problems you're solving or what are the things that you are trying to ultimately deliver? And then what is going to be your point of differentiation? I mean, it all comes down to, isn't it? Like, I can turn my lights on with one with one assistant versus another assistant? Well, why would I want one assistant over the other? Is it easier to schedule reminders? Is it easier for me to control remotely? Do I feel like I have a better connection, or do I like the interface a little bit better? It's thinking through all of those things that kind of, again, a user centricity of who exactly is that audience. The more you know about your audience, and it's not from a, I know they like to listen to Coldplay and I know that they have a dog named Spot. It's more of the, I know that they're overtaxed because they're overwhelmed because they work 9 to 5, they're a parent, and then they also have that. It's understanding those particular psychographics and those pieces about them that then can help you dissect, where am I going to be able to make them sing? And if you can't figure that out, it's okay to talk to them and ask, you know, and maybe not ask them, but get around to those ideas of the things that would make things easier. Because it is amazing how many times I've worked on something and the research tells me, just based off of what we've seen in behaviors of, hey, this is what they want. This is what, no, I actually just want to do this. Just let me do this. And it's like, oh, that's it. That'll make my life amazing if I can just schedule my appointment 3 weeks earlier. And if I can do it by just asking instead of having to look at my calendar, or can you link, like simple things like that. So it's kind of digging into that. How do you make life easier? And what are those things that are going to do? And that's the strategy behind it. Before you even start to say, these are my requirements, you start to, you know, it's where those user stories come into play big time.
Yeah, we really see voice as a great opportunity for organizations to truly understand their audience and their needs. And so I'm not gonna lie, we've kind of gotten lazy over the past 20 years on the web. Because, oh, we have the data. Oh, we know what people do.
We know best practices.
But every time you talk to your audience, you learn something new. And so here's a huge opportunity, because it's a new modality. We don't exactly know how people are going to use it. We have some ideas, but, you know, specifically within car, it's going to require a different, it has a different set of challenges than in home. You know, obviously you're driving primarily, so the voice experience is secondary and you can't necessarily focus as heavily on it. So what does that do to the experience? And so by interviewing your audience and potentially doing ride-alongs and actually understanding how people are going to use these assistants while they're driving, that's really where those ideas to unlock the use cases are going to come from. And so again, it's a huge opportunity for us to really get a true idea of what people need to do with these assistants in the different situations, the types of tasks they're trying to complete, the information they're looking for. You know, are they trying to order fast food and do you need to interface with a McDonald's, for instance? You know, whatever, like I'm looking for the nearest gas station and making sure it's in front of you versus 10 miles behind you on the road. You know, those types of considerations are things we have to figure out, but what better way to do that than to actually talk to the people that'll be using your technology?
And that's where crawl, walk, run comes into play really well. Is it gives you the razor focus to say, we're going to do this, solve this X problem. Like to Scott's point, we're going to solve the fill up. How do I find a gas station? And I make sure like that I can get my onboard computer to tell me how much mileage they have. So I'm not telling them, oh yeah, here's our gas station, it's 50 miles out, but you only have enough gas to get 40. Like figuring out that part. But then what you're able to do is start to really say, here's what success is also going to look like. So it isn't sort of, we're going to make everyone happy. Well, that's not going to work. What are the things that we're going to do? And then you can start to add more to it of, oh, well, next time they can ask if it also offers food service, or that there's also lodging near there, and starts to kind of build upon that. But people get comfortable because if you've been able to deliver on that one piece, then they start to trust it. And I think it's also, you get to find out like, what is someone comfortable asking their car assistant? In hearing Mercedes talk about some of the things that they're like, well, it's going to answer some questions about social issues. And I'm like, really? Someone's going to ask their car that, but someone clearly has, because that's what their data is guiding them towards. Well, that's a really interesting thing about then news and information. It's more than just telling me about my car and navigation. All right, how do I make this? How do I build this out? And those are insights you can only get from the data. So that iteration is really important. And that's one of the other exciting things about voice. After launch, your work's not done. And we stress that with our clients all the time of, just because we launched it, it's not like a website and I can walk away. I mean, not that you should ever do that with a website, by the way. But the idea there is that then you're going to learn so much more. And you're going to be able to go, and no matter how much testing you've done, you're able to, like, you almost build in that iteration of, we have our first launch and then we have the 2.0, because we're going to learn that much more. And it isn't that first parts fail. It's just people, as they get comfortable, really start to push things, because it's amazing what one does when one doesn't know you're not supposed to be doing that. And so that helps you with your boundaries too, because boundaries are key, especially when you're dealing with reporting up. And I had a client who had a thing called the how come couch, when the CEO would literally have her come in every day, and she was reporting up to the CMO, and it was, how come you invested this much money? How come our numbers are like this? And I used to always cringe for her, but her sharing that with me, again, helped me be a better client service person, because then I always knew that she was going to have to answer that question. And so that's kind of in the back of my head, always thinking of, it's not just about solving all of these client problems, but how do I arm and how do I help someone be able to answer when someone, you know, five levels up looks at them and goes, well, how come you did that? It's, you know, it's just your job on the line. No big deal. Like, helping them be able to do that. And if I can explain that, then they can explain it. But that also means it's clear in everyone's head.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. These are all so important points, right? For someone to consider when they are designing. And you mentioned multiple assistants when we were talking. That brings me to our next question. And nowadays there are so many assistants out there, and of course people have their own favorite, right?
Yes.
And the competition is a lot now, because there are, you know, voice assistants everywhere in every appliance nowadays, and mm-hmm. different brands. Everyone is trying to compete in this space. Now, in terms of, you know, like for the user, it's just like, if I'm the user, I would have my own preference and I don't want to have 10 different, you know. So how do you think, you know, this playing out in future, as we start thinking about, you know, multiple assistants being in there? Do you think, you know, coexistence strategies will come into play, or people have to start thinking about arbitration strategies in place? Or is it like, okay, you do your stuff, that's it, and just compete?
Well, we saw what happened in mobile with the walled gardens of iOS and Android. And being that we've been around since the early days of the web, we're big proponents of open standards and being able to, from an organization standpoint, create content in one place and push it to multiple platforms, devices, whatever. And so Susan and I are members, or ambassadors actually, for the Open Voice Network. We also lead the Designer Strategist Group, but overall, the mission of the Open Voice Network is to create voice worthy of user trust, as you know. But what we're trying to do is create open standards that will enable enterprises to create content potentially in one place. Maybe it's in a headless CMS, content management system, so that then it can be pushed out to Alexa, to Google Assistant, to Bixby, to the website, to mobile application, whatever the case might be. And so while it's in its infancy, I think that's where we're going to see a lot of maturation in voice, because as an enterprise organization, it would be impossible to support all of the different platforms and then also build your own assistant. It's going to take way too much from an investment time. Updates, which is a thing that a lot of people don't think about, but if you have to update 7 separate instances, your costs go up exponentially. And so, you know, borrowing from what the content world has figured out in the past 15-ish years, the concept of create once, publish everywhere, I think is going to be a really big topic and trend over the next, say, 5 years in voice. And so while we're still not quite there from a technology standpoint, I think that's definitely the vision. And also from a consumer standpoint, creating consistency in invocations and commands. So one of my favorite things is on Alexa, the volume is actually in increments of 1 to 10. On Siri and on Google Assistant, you can say 40%, 50%, 60%. And for a very long time, it was just how it was. And it was because that's how Amazon was approaching it versus Google. And so we actually were talking to Paul Kutzinger, and I'm like, hey, Paul, why is it that I have to say 1 to 10 on your platform and everyone else can say 50% or whatever? He goes, really? And so he looked at it, he goes, yeah, you're right. That actually shouldn't be the case. It should be however the user wants to do it. So I think if we can start to establish some common vernacular, invocations, commands, things like that, so that it's less important what assistant you're working with and it's more focused on the tasks you're trying to complete, I think that's going to go a long way as well. We're not there yet, but I think that's the vision, and I think where we're going to be heading over the next couple of years.
Well, and I think the other thing too, is that it comes down to the Google versus Alexa argument. Like, which one? Well, depending on what country, Alexa might not even be an option, or it might just be that there's more Google. There's the other part too of when people are talking about their voice devices, they forget that their phone is a voice device. So that's where we also try to be agnostic. It should work across. Plus, as much as Amazon has done amazing inroads in this type of space, they've been known to stop stuff. Same with Google. Like there are certain programs I've worked on with clients before where they're like, yeah, and we're ending it. I'm like, no, don't. So the problem is that while consumers are like, all right, cool. I know that when we're talking to certain stakeholders, they're like, they did it to me once. How on earth will we? So we always try to think of it in the sense of how can this work on multiple platforms so that it's the users in control and it works across all of them. That's a lot more work, but thank goodness for things like to be able to make it so that you can be a little more efficient. And that's also where then the concept of structured content comes into play. I talk a lot about content A because I'm biased. I'm a content strategist at start. But the other part of it is that as Rebecca Evanhoe talks about the word holes, it's really important what goes in those word holes. So it's important to have a thought through of how am I going to make sure that the content I'm using is consistent, is on brand as much as it needs to be so it doesn't get in the way. But then also, how do I make sure that it's clear and concise and going through all of those important things? So there's a lot of work that goes into that, of thinking that through. Let's make sure that that can be used multiple places, because the brain trust, when you start to figure that out, can be applied across all of the conversation is a conversation. The back end's a whole other story, but we can start to try to make sure that that works across there. So when they interact, I mean, there are going to be a number of voice assistants, but I think that, and there's a difference between how I talk to my refrigerator as opposed to how I deal with the puck. And I think that's the other thing too, is we're going to have like that spontaneous leadership where, hey, you know what? It's really good. I can ask about product stuff to my Echo device, but if I want to find out some facts and information, maybe I'll go to Google because they know how to manage content differently. They've been doing it a lot longer. And then if I just want to know what's going on in my house from a utility perspective of I can turn the water on, I'm good with that. I think it's just a matter of getting consumers to think it through. I can talk to that.
Yeah, totally. So this is from the consumer standpoint, right? You know, like trying to standardize things for them so that it becomes easier for them. And clearly, you know, like I also know many people who have all the devices, you know, they are evangelists. So they have all the devices like Alexa, Google and everything, right? So it's fine in that kind of setup where, you know, you have more flexibility because maybe you have a Samsung refrigerator.
Right.
So it comes equipped with the Samsung Bixby voice assistant. And maybe you have an Alexa and you have some other devices and you're just playing around with all of them. But how does this strategy works in the enterprise standpoint where let's say like this is the brand and this brand wants to now create a voice assistant and they're not clear about what is the right way to go about it. Like, because let's take an example of car, right? We have so many competition right now because Alexa is trying to get into the automotive space and Google is also trying to get into it. Then we also have, you know, CarPlay and Android Auto and Siri and Google is already available to that. And then there are these companies who are trying to build their own proprietary voice assistants nowadays. So with all of these things, it's very easy for stakeholders to sometimes think like, well, you know, buying or partnership is a better strategy than building something from the scratch because I have everything available and the user's data is available and all of those things, right? But from the brand standpoint, maybe building will make more sense because then, you know, you are creating something completely fresh, you know, which will reflect on your brand. So how does one think about build versus buy strategy when they are thinking about these kind of things?
I think you start with why. Why are you using voice in the first place? Are you doing it because you want your information everywhere? And then I think you can also think through how important is it that my brand owns this 100%. We're big proponents of not using the default Alexa voice for that very reason. Anytime we are building a skill, because you can acquiesce a lot when you're using that type of default tone. So a lot of that production comes in. The other question that comes into play is how much are you willing to invest? How committed are you? Because the creation of such a thing, you're going to have to keep it going. And you're going to have, like, when it comes to those updates and those types of things, it's like the difference between building, I think of it a lot of times from a website perspective of are you going to have a non-technical person? Are you going to build this whole content management system for your website because you're going to have non-technical people? Does it make sense then to look at the efficiencies? Or are you going to have a whole team that's already focused on that? And therefore you don't need to have that layer of a content management system or of a platform so that you have the freedom and you don't have the walled gardens. So I think you have to think through kind of the end game of where is it I want to land? Is this my proprietary thing that I own and I accept that maybe it won't always hook into every single existing platform, but it will do what it needs to do. It will cover off on that. And I'm not going where I can leverage, because we all know that, like, even from a navigation perspective, you got to use your Google Maps, figure that out and use the parts that make sense. But then what are the things that will make it singularly itself? And can you build around that?
Yeah. The other part is in automotive, you guys have a whole different set of considerations and constraints than we do in the regular world, from the length of time from concept to actually releasing the product. You know, there's just all these different considerations. So I have heard of organizations in the automotive space using a strategy of let's build on Alexa, let's get our usage data, understand what our audience is doing, and that will inform something we're doing down the road. I've heard of that. I've certainly seen, you know, people like Mercedes and other folks having their own home-built assistants. And so it also depends on how quickly you need to get to market, what your goals are. Is it more of a education and learning process, or do you want to physically build something from the ground up and really own it? But at the end of the day, just know that you're trying to solve audience challenges and business challenges with it, and decide what makes the most sense and what gives you that immediate ROI. And all those things that we kind of talked about earlier really factor into it. But again, you have so many different constraints and restrictions, and, you know, how data is shared, and all, like all those things. Like, I have utmost empathy for anyone working in automotive. Because it is a very challenging space. And I don't think people really fully appreciate all the challenges that you guys go through to try to bring products to market.
I was gonna say, you need what, a crystal ball that sees 7 years in the future.
Yeah.
I mean, so there's a lot of pieces with that where I'm also wondering if, like, from a build perspective, sometimes I'm wondering if it's just easier, but that's where then you figure out what's the most important. What are my deal breakers so that you can start to get that scalable?
Yeah, totally. These are also great points. And the special challenge with automotive is not just the architecture, not the, you know, the go-to-market strategy itself, or, you know, all of these things, but one of the other challenges is the architecture itself and the connectivity, right? Mm-hmm. Like, do we have the connectivity or not? So if we don't have, what is our OTA strategy, over-the-air updates, right? Mm-hmm. And all of those things. So it kind of gets complicated, but definitely I love working in this space for sure. But then when it comes to automotive, they have a different mindset, right? They think about car first. Technology is, you know, add-on benefit for them, versus when it comes to any consumer side products, you know, for them it is different because they are completely embedding into the technology. So that mindset change, I feel, is again a very, you know, big thing. And it's very difficult, especially it may be difficult in other situations as well to buy in, like you were mentioning earlier, right? To get that buy-in from the senior leadership. But that becomes more complicated in an automotive scenario, because now, you know, our vision is an automobile, you know, like it takes me from point A to B, EV, and has 10 or 15, you know, cool features in there. That's how, you know, they think about it. And that is where many companies actually start thinking about, well, you know what, let's build something, you know, through partnership rather than from the scratch kind of thing. But if, let's suppose the data suggests that, you know, building your own would make more sense, because we know voice assistant, like I always keep saying, voice assistant is like your employee of the company, you know, it's your first interaction with the brand. And who do you want to give that benefit to? Do you want to 100%. Give the benefit to Alexa, Google Assistant, or your own assistant, right? Yeah. And when it comes to stakeholder or convincing the stakeholder in a complex environment like automotive, right? How do we even approach that?
I think, well, where we used to always start is we start with some of the data numbers of showing exactly, here's what usage is, here's what people, we know how people are using things and going from there. And then we then also look at kind of like hitting the analysis side and then also the emotional side. So you start talking about the branding and covering of do you want to be able to own this or do you want to be able to cover off on that? But I think it would probably be a twofold punch. And then I probably throw a little bit of competitive review in there of seeing aspirationally, here's what some of my competitors are doing. I'm always cautious about competitive only because having worked with some major Fortune 50 brands, there's a lot of times that everyone's like, oh, they have it all figured out. And I've learned they don't always have it figured out. So when people start patterning, it's like, you're redoing the mistakes that we've been doing, or your goals are different than ours. But I think it's a matter of coming down the path of saying, what are the things that we can sell? And even going from a safety perspective, that is one of the nice things that you can talk through is, hey, we can be able to do this. And it might be then looking at of how to enhance. I think one of the stories that comes with voice that's sometimes hard is our goal of voice isn't always to replace. It's to enhance and to add another way. And again, I think in automotive, there are some ways that you can make that things are easier, but also safer, because I remember the first time that we traded in my 10-year-old Civic for our first our Acura RDX, and looking at the screen and the guy at the dealership being like, okay, so there's a lot of screens now. You should just try working on the radio. Otherwise the distractions, you're going to drive into things. And I laughed to myself, but I remember being like, this is a lot more input. Looking at some other vehicles now, it is figuring out how do you balance that crux? Because like you said, there's can only so much that can fit in there. So it's prioritizing that of what are those things. And I think again, it's also looking at your customer service and being like, everyone's complaining about this or everyone wants this. I have a way to solve this in an easier way, hopefully easier. But here are some ways that we can enhance and improve that, or we can deal with that SAT score, or we can help go after that JD Power and associate piece. Sometimes you do have to go for the intangibles. Again, that's where that ROI story comes through. We have some clients who are really excited about when we can improve an NPS, the Net Promoter Score, and improve customer satisfaction, because in their particular situation, they've made their decision and then going from there. And I think that's the other angle you might even be able to look at. This is me talking off the top of my head, not having research, but it might not be about a purchase consideration that deep. It's about making someone so happy that they are return purchasers. Because I mean, once you buy your car, it's 2 to 4 years. I mean, we're atypical. We have a tendency to just hold on to them forever. But it is kind of going through and saying, how do I get them to consider that they'll purchase it again and stay within the brand family? So I think that that's another thing too, of those are might be some ways to come at it from a stakeholder perspective. It's a long game, but everything we can do to help with that always, you know, does help towards that idea of I'm thinking about business. I'm not just thinking about really cool innovation or shiny disco balls. And I know that that's helped me a lot at the boardroom level of explaining like, no, and this is how I've thought about how that can fit. And even though it's not perfect, it gets you at least be able to get the conversation going.
Yeah, definitely. These are very, very important, you know, like points which you are talking about. And I feel, you know, something to consider right from the big thing when someone is thinking about approaching the voice, like how do you even go about it, right? Now, there's another part which you mentioned, which was like your app is ready and now you have to constantly keep updating it because your job is not done. It's not a website. In fact, we do update the websites too, right?
Yeah.
Constantly.
Hopefully.
That's true. But then now there's another big thing. So, and this happens often, right? If you are designing your skill or an action for Google, that's a whole new problem to solve for because, you know, their discoverability is a complex problem to solve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I launched my skill yesterday called the Digital Assistant Academy. But when I was trying to search for the skill, I was not able to find it because, you know, there were like 3,000 plus more search results, which were not completely relevant. Like right. It was not picking the right keyword at all. That's the problem. But then if you look at a phone system kind of thing, it's a different, right? But if you look at the car system now, there may be 10 things the car is capable of doing. And how would the user even know how to do that? So do we start thinking about, you know, those kind of discoverability strategies right in the beginning when we are designing, or do we start thinking about it, you know, later on, depending on the usage data?
I think what you do is you establish your features in roadmap, and immediately involve marketing. And so marketing is not a four-letter word. We shouldn't be mm-hmm. demonizing them, because they are very helpful and they can help educate in addition to sell. And so what we're big proponents of is using all of your channels to make sure that people actually know what your product does and how they can engage with it. So it could be email, it could be social, it could be TV, depending on what organization and what you have at your disposal. There could also be a PR component to it, but it's, here's what it does. All right, marketers, how can we make sure that our audience understands that, you know, the new car assistant does X, Y, and Z? So there could be some onboarding built into the experience, but in addition to that, they're probably entered into a database when they make a purchase. They're probably getting emails already. Could you go through and create a couple of videos talking about the different features? Could you go through and have emails with a tip of the day that actually drips out the different features? And so it's very much like the early days of mobile, where we had explainer videos and landing pages and mm-hmm. things like that to explain what the app does, and then ultimately driving them to download the app. The same strategies apply here, but what we do in voice is we kind of fall into the, how do we solve it with voice? And the way we solve it is actually using all the other things that we have at our disposal that are already getting in front of the consumer's eyeballs, so that we have the best chance of educating. So like I said, I think the big part is, once you start to figure out what those features are, bring in the marketing team, bring in the comms team, have them help you craft that story and the messaging, so that when you do launch, you have a launch plan, you have a sustained plan, so that people actually over time get comfortable with the technology. And really at the end of the day, that's why we do the crawl, walk, run thing. It's start small, get them used to it, get them using it, and then add some other stuff. And so it's a great way to really enhance that experience by bringing in the marketing and communications team, so that you can actually do a really good job of education.
Yeah. I mean, I could even see you doing like during your test drives.
Yeah.
Make sure that that gets shown, that you can, did you know you can do that? And well, that's not going to be something that makes someone consideration. It is going to be hits the cockles of their heart, and they're going to say, well, but that one, I could do this and this. And those are, you know, those are those emotional moments of when the light goes off and then you're like, no, I love this. I need that. Because it's sort of like when we bought our first condo, it had heat, ambient heated floors. I'm like, I don't need those. And then I'm like, I need those, living in the city of Chicago in polar vortexes. So it's a matter of just making some, also kind of thrusting it upon someone when you know that that's a nice to have, especially it, sometimes it's with the luxury vehicles, you can really play that up. But even with the practical side of things, of like, did you know you can do this? And just letting them know. But again, it's all hands on deck. Like, I don't even like to call it a discovery problem. I like to call it an awareness problem, because discovery is a little too Lewis and Clark for me, hoping that someone finds them in the jungle. No, I want to be able to, I can drive awareness. I can drive my traffic. So I'm a control freak that way too, but it's being able to kind of go through and say, here's all the things you can do. Put it in the, can you also like in the sheet of your quick start manual that, you know, let's be honest, most people don't look at the big manual. They look at that quick start of what the heck, is there a page on there? Here's all the things you can do with voice, and just do that. And it's adding those pieces in. So that way, then it also shows like, they've really thought this through. This is really actually going to be a part of it, because it's showing up in a couple of places. And again, it's also, you know, in your demo videos or anything like that, again, have someone show that you could do that. And it's amazing how quickly then people are like, well, if I could ask this, can I ask that? Mm-hmm. And that's where you start to get that rich data. But launch is definitely like, when we did our first process, building off of what we know about audio production, what we know about development, what we know about strategy and research, our blueprint originally was discover, design and develop, because we believe designers and developers should work together. And then it was iterate. We realized quite quickly, there needs to be a launch phase. And that is just the dedicated idea of the care and feeding of the awareness and marketing and driving of folks to that experience. Because you've gone through all this effort of creating something for someone. Make sure that someone knows. You know, it's kind of like a Hallmark card, but the idea is to make sure that they're aware and that they know. And that's also then where you, it's okay to step away and not say, oh, this is going to be for everyone. That's okay, because most of the time, it's not going to be for everyone, but if you do it for that one audience and they're like, that's amazing, you've won, Like, it doesn't have to be the most viral thing in the world. It's amazing if it is. But if we try to solve it for everyone, chances are you're not going to solve it for anyone. So it's kind of looking at that. And then the big platforms, if you're on one of those platforms, picks it up and says, it's great. Thank you. Awesome. I've got that extra. But being tethered to the one-time hits of being featured in an email, that email versus the targeted email that you would be able to send to your buying audience, I think is very different and what you can accomplish there. So it's, I think that's also where it's important to use, where you can use that targeting that you already have.
So see, automotive is a different space, right? But then now think about voice and hotel, hospitals or drive-thrus, mm-hmm. right? Even they are everywhere and is picking up. In those kind of scenarios, you know, I'm just driving through and trying to get some burger or something, right? I don't know what all they can do. Now, how do you fit in discoverability or, you know, to your point, awareness there? Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of that discovery would be driven on the retailer side or on the mm-hmm. hospital side. So I don't think the onus is always going to be on the, in this case, automotive manufacturer to educate, mm-hmm. you know, their audience on all the things they can do. I think it's really going to be up to, again, say McDonald's has a virtual drive-through with an AI assistant. It's really on them to, you know, help educate their audience. And if their audience happens to overlap with your audience, they're going to actually know that if I'm in this kind of a car or I have this kind of an assistant, I can actually pre-order ahead of time and just do curbside, or I could go through the drive-through and just order like normal, but I'm talking to a virtual assistant. A hospital, that's going to be very different depending on who's using it. If it's a patient, is it a nurse, is it a physician? What type of tasks do we want them to be able to do? There's certainly been pilots using Alexa in the hospital room, bedside, and actually being able to make requests of nursing staff, let's say. So a lot of the hospital use cases that I've seen are very specific test cases, and they've seen a lot of success actually. And so again, much like the call center idea, what are some basic things that you can offload to a virtual assistant, mm-hmm. have those requests handled so someone doesn't have to hit a button, call a nurse to change a channel, let's say. You know, whatever the things are, what can we do to actually enhance the man and woman power that exists within an organization and give them more time to focus on the more difficult things they have to? But again, it's very, very specific to what they're trying to achieve. Is it trying to improve the patient experience? Is it trying to make it easier for physicians to do their clinical notes and enter it into the electronic medical records? It really depends on what they're trying to achieve. But again, based on whoever their audience is, it's up to them to educate them and make sure that they can actually do what they need to do.
Yeah, I think when it gets to that, it's the heart of why did I do it in the first place?
Yeah.
Am I trying to improve patient experience? Then I'm going to make sure that's included in all my patient experience materials. Mm-hmm. And again, that's where I'm partnering again with my communications team within the hospital system of make sure that this is communicated out and that my board of directors knows that we've done one more thing, that Joint Commission knows that we've done this, like letting all of those particular groups know. But then if it's more of a patient care, then I'm going to make sure that then I'm doing a grassroots perspective of talking to the nursing care staff, that I'm making sure that doctors are aware. And then yes, there are ways that I will make sure that there's stuff in room to make sure that my patient knows how to use it, but it's a different experience than of how much you broadly broadcast that. And then the PR side of it, do I make sure that the American Nursing Journal, you know, the AJN hears me or that gets covered off on. So that's also where it comes into play. And that's where partners come into play too, of, hey, if you want to take advantage, like, you know, as we talked about quick serve restaurants, make sure that on your mobile app, you can let someone know, hey, you know, you could order ahead, blah, blah, blah. Cause they aren't going to care if they're still getting the sale. They're good with it more than likely. So it's just making sure that you have that symbiotic relationship of I'm getting them used to seeing the value of what it is. Oh, and by the way, there's a way that I can work with my partner restaurant to be able to help with that. So it's just important to put that through. And that's where also mobile comes into play. Are they voice enabling an app that way? Then that's fine. And then talking through how does that work?
So eventually everything boils down to your end customer and data. And, you know, like your stakeholders and how you manage each of them and, you know, what kind of relationship you want to have with each of them to create a better strategy. So it's not one person's job, but it's like everyone has to be involved and have to think about, you know, who we are designing for, what is our goal, and all of the things which you mentioned.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not specific to voice. I mean, this is product design, this is digital strategy, this is content. And so it really borrows from all of the different roles that we've had to live in our careers. And it's really given us clarity to say, this is how we should approach this problem. So at the end of the day, we're solving a business problem and an audience problem. That's it. And it happens to be that we chose voice as the vehicle to do it. But again, we have to know who our audience is. We have to know what the stakeholders want to do. We have to really make the business case in order for this to be successful, because people aren't going to invest if you can't make the case for it. And if you can't say that, you know, within a year, we're going to see this type of a result, and it's going to result in more acquisition, more sales, less customer support problems, like whatever the goals are. Like if you just say it's really cool and we should do it, no one's going to invest in it. And so those are, you know, some business basics that I think we all need to keep in mind as we start to come up with our strategies and our approaches and voice, because we can't just sell the technology. It's not going to sell itself. So
definitely. So any suggestions for aspiring designers or people who want to get into voice technology or voice space?
I would definitely recommend, like, the very first book I read with Kathy Pearls. There's like, Your Academy and all of those things are amazing. Wish those would have existed 2 years ago. As looking through of understanding that, I think also look at UX books and understand information architecture. There's a very simple book by a woman by the name of Abby Covert called How to Make Sense of Any Mess. It's a very nice, approachable book about information architecture, which as you learn about structuring things and structuring content, it's a really helpful thing. It also helps you understand you're not alone. There's been some folks who have gone through the pain of a million spreadsheets already and started to navigate that. So you can look and borrow. It won't be a one for one, but there are some places you can seek inspiration from. And then I'd also say get involved. Like there's Voice Lunch out there, there's Open Voice Network. There's a lot of places where we're trying to make sure that people can talk, especially in this day where we don't get to have conferences, and get involved and start writing things. And it's still a young industry. There aren't as many seniors as one would think. So just continue to go through that and go through like where you can learn and practice on sort of trying to work that through. It's really helpful. Another thing too, is if you want to wet your whistle from a creative standpoint, script writing is any type of script writing classes. If you don't have access to get to straight up conversational AI, that's something that can help hone that craft as well.
Well, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention our book. So we wrote a book called Voice Strategy, and really the book is kind of chunked into thirds. So the first third is the, you know, opportunity that voice represents and really some of the why and the business case. And then the last two thirds are actually our process and the tools and techniques we use, which again, borrow from the best of product design, user experience, content strategy, and how we can actually start to attack this big hairy problem that is voice. So if you go to voicestrategybook.com, you can actually get the book for free. All you have to do is pay for shipping. And it's actually a very good resource, very easy to read. So that would also be a good starting point if you were interested in the strategy and the why and how to actually start to convince stakeholders that this is actually something to invest in.
Yeah. And there's a pretty deep works cited and works consulted section that I really wanted to put in there to give at least a somewhat of a list of here's what exists at the time. I think a few more books have come out since then, but I'm just trying to find those resources because I think it's all about being curious and educating yourself that way.
Yeah, those are all great resources. And definitely, you know, I'll make sure we add all of those into the show notes.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
We're always on Twitter. And then there's also our website is pragmatic.digital, and LinkedIn are our places as well. You can also just email us. I'm Susan@pragmatic.digital and Scott is Scott@pragmatic.digital.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking with you both today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us on. It was great to chat.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening today. If you would like to post a voice comment, please go to www.witlingo.com/DAA. That's www.witlingo.com/DAA. We'd love to hear from you. Remember, you can find all the information on becoming a certified voice interaction designer, along with show notes and more at our website, digitalassistant.academy. That's digitalassistant.academy. We encourage your feedback and questions. Be sure to get in touch by using the contact page at the Digital Assistant Academy's website. We will include the link in the show notes. In our next episode, Matthew Hammersley, co-founder and CEO at Novel Effect Incorporated, talks about voice design strategy for kids. Until next week, take care.